Well, the chief commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps says his country is resolute in taking revenge for the U.S.'s assassination of General Qasem Soleimani.
We're serious and resolute in taking revenge of General Soleimani. That's definite. We'll target the ones who were involved directly or indirectly in the martyrdom of this great man.
Major General Hossein Salami made the remarks during a ceremony of the IRGC General Staff in Tehran. He underlined that Iran has a fair manner in retaliation, and that was evident when the IRGC targeted an American military base in Iraq. Salami was referring to Iranian missile strikes on the Ain al-Assad base hosting U.S. forces back in January. Well, the attack was in response to Soleimani's assassination. The top Iranian general was targeted while he was on an official visit to neighboring country of Iraq. Iran says the International Atomic Energy Agency has announced that it has no further requests for inspections in the country other than two locations. The agency
and create a great front of battle, and in all this battlefield was able to face the enemy with great defeats and threats. This reality happened, and this is the glamorous role of the Iranian nation that has become the example, an example for the whole Muslim world. And a great part of the world is enlightened by this shine from the resistance. And we have a great prospect of great successes in the future. We see that the enemy is moving back. They have not been able to realize any of their political objectives. They have been frustrated. They have failed in their management, whether it is in the field of economy or their own domestic issues such as the coronavirus crisis. So all this shows that the Iranian nation has been patiently and resistantly and vigilantly standing against the enemy's plot. This perseverance and resistance and this patience that the Iranian nation has shown against economic hardships and has been resisting against the calls from all the enemies and has created a history of livelihood and shows that despite all sanctions and pressures, it's moving ahead, is pressing ahead with its efforts and foils the enemy's economic war. All this shows Iran's great capacities. Iranians are miraculous. Their vigilance is praiseworthy. This nation's understanding is admirable. Their unity is really exciting. Their faith is great. And no matter how we praise them, wars are not able to present the praise that this nation is worthy of. And only God knows that his subjects are so beautiful and great, and they have been moving ahead so greatly in this international front against the enemy and bearing enemies repeated failures. You correctly refer to a great dimension of the war that the enemy has been imposing against the Iranian nation since the Iran-Iraq war, and that is an all-out war in different fields. And their maximum pressure campaign targets Iran, Iranian people's economy. They want to face our economy with serious problems. The IRGC specifically, what measures have they thought of in this field? We as the IRGC are working on two ways. One is the professional level of economy. And we have an economic center with 220 great national projects that we are working on the infrastructure of construction. And all these years where the enemy has been trying to stop our progress, and weaken our economy, to portray our country as old-fashioned and underdeveloped, our economic center has not allowed any of these projects to be affected by these sanctions. All the projects are moving ahead. Whether the 17 dams in our warm areas, they are working on our agricultural sector, whether it is the Persian Gulf Star project, which is working, which is producing almost half of the petroleum produced in the country. So the center's role in the gas fields in South Pars, as one of the great gas projects in the country, which has had a great role in protecting our energy interests, to great tunnels for great dams that have been built to save stray waters and move our agricultural sector ahead and to progress in that field. Great constructions projects, different hospitals, like the Darazi Hospital that was opened a couple of days ago in Tehran, and examples like this. And beside that, we have had the goal of creating a leap in our production. We try to help the working class, the IRGC and other institutions. We have been trying to stand by the people who are not wealthy, and we have been trying to help the society. And we have been able to prevent negligence and prevent oblivion of the poor people in the coronavirus crisis. And we have been trying to advertise the culture of altruism and endowment, and we have been showing a great management in society. Look at the U.S. society today. as a developed society and a modern society, which everybody had expected to display the greatest management of the crisis, the greatest handling of the crisis, of the COVID-19 crisis. But 30 million hungry people exist in the U.S., according to data from the Bloomberg Research Center. There is great unemployment, and the political system in the U.S. has not been able to stand against this phenomenon. You see the number of fatalities and infections and the U.S. inability to control this crisis, and compare it with the Iranian nation, Iran's leadership that has been strongly standing against this crisis and have been able to keep the society lively and going, and all the people moved hand in hand to help each other. They shared their happiness and shared their sadness and sorrows. And this society has been able to foil, to resist this situation. The Iranian nation is capable of foiling all these pressure. The enemy has launched an all-out war, and they wanted to pressure the Iranian people and force them to their knees and make them frustrated and desperate. But all their efforts were useless. They were futile. This is all the heritage from the holy resistance, the Iran-Iraq war. The resistance of a nation is like a running reality within time. The Iranian nation is indeed successful and are proud. All the prouds that you see in our society exist everywhere in the world. Look at European countries, look at Italy, France, the UK, the United States, all other countries. All of them are desperate. But this is not the same here. Thank you very much, General. I have a lot of other questions.
Live there in Tehran, you just heard Hossein Salami speaking, commander of Iran's Revolutionary Guards Corps, in a live interview covering a range of issues and activities, including past and present, that the IRGC has been involved with. Salami said the enemies of Iran have perpetuated a number of proxy wars in the region, knowing it will pull the Iranian nation into them in one capacity or the other, that Iran has stood by and spearheaded resistance against Western hegemony and plots in the region, that today the resistance in the region is stronger than ever. IRGC commander went on to say that Iran has persevered in its drive to move forward and achieve its goals in the face of immense pressure and sanctions, that resolve and patience to do so has been evident throughout the country. In fact, the IRGC, he said, has helped the Iranian nation complete hundreds of infrastructure projects, has helped the needy, and has helped the fight against the COVID-19 pandemic, all in the face of crippling sanctions imposed on the country by its foes. And we're following all these stories very closely right here on Press TV, everyone. Stay tuned and goodbye for now.
If Americans want to fight our enemy, our country, they have to stay in the region. They can't fight us outside this region. They have to be stationed in the region and fight us. When they are stationed in the region, everywhere, they are under our they are within our sight and our fire range. We are able to target all U.S. interests and positions set them on fire all at the same time. We can occupy all their bases. We can inflict great human losses on them on a daily basis. We can sweep the whole region. The power we have gathered and assembled today in the worst scenario of a war against the U.S. and a great alliance led by the U.S. after the Iran-Iraq war, up to now, we have developed our defense power in the along this line that we should not lose not only lose in such a war, but be triumphant, whether it is in the air or on land or at sea. If the Americans stay in the region and decide to fight us, they have to stay, of course. And if they stay, they will be destroyed. If they leave, they can't fight us. If they leave the region to stay safe out of our fire range, they can't fight. And if they want to fight, they have to stay. And their stay means they will be affected by our stormy moves. We successfully passed 8 years of war with an international alliance. The U.S. has fought us 8 years once. The Iran-Iraq war, didn't have any warring capacity more than the whole world, the U.S., the U.K., France, and the U.K. provided it with. The enemy was at the peak of its strength, and we were in our weakest position. The distance between our military prowess was so great, was so big, and all the traditional analyses showed that we could not resist, but we were successful. Everything went by contrast. We dictated the equation of power. Our IRGC forces, our army, our voluntary forces are the same. We are the kind of people that punish our enemies. We resist. We have thousands of brigades on land. They can be mobilized. If they move, they can occupy and seize and set ablaze all the U.S. interests and bases. Americans are caught in a dilemma. They either have to stay or be defeated, or they have to leave, and again they will be defeated. They have to accept defeat. And the best position is to stay out of this dilemma. Unless Americans are crazy to pose themselves to let themselves be exposed to a great threat, a great military power that can target them. When we targeted Ain al-Assad military base in Syria, we did it with the prospects of the U.S. response. And we had hundreds of other missiles ready for their response. But the missiles was only a small part of our defense and military power. If this power is mobilized, no power will have the ability to resist us. What I say is not a play with words. I hate psychological warfare. I hate boasting. I hate words without practice. I say today, I announce, we are not afraid of any war. Of course, we don't welcome any war. We are not warmongers. But we have the capability to resist indefinitely to follow the enemy and destroy it. And this is not only words. It is an indefinite power on land, under the ground, in the air. Look, when somebody talks about 1,000 times of a reaction, this is so big a word that nobody will believe it. Exaggeration has to be believable. If the U.S. said we would respond twice as big, that could be borne in mind. It could be considered part of psychological warfare, or it could be analyzed as their decision for a bigger response. It is important that they said it in response. The prospect of we might try to retaliate by assassinating a U.S. diplomat in South Africa, a funny assumption in retaliation for the assassination of our great general. We are a gallant nation. We will never assassinate someone who didn't have a role in the assassination of this great man. Our revenge will be just and fair. Our revenge is gallant. What will give us the relief of revenge unless the accept the defeat of the enemy? We wanted Qasem Soleimani's dreams to be realized. We follow this line. Now imagine, in response to an operation, if they threaten a response 2-3 times as big. But look, the U.S. cannot do anything. They have been unable to do so. In Tabas, they burned alive in that sandstorm. This is a real evidence. The U.S. defeat within the Iran-Iraq war was a battlefield reality. Their inability to sanction the Iranian nation and force them to their knees is a real example. Their defeat in their psychological and cultural warfare against Iranian people and their inability to draw the Iranians to the streets, the detention of their Marines in the Persian Gulf is a real example. The downing of their drones in the Persian Gulf is a real story. The strike on Ain al-Assad is a real story. In all these examples, the U.S. could not do anything in response. Today, the U.S. is at its weakest position and it still cannot do anything against the Iranian nation. Iranian nation is, as usual, peaceful, proud, and steadfast. We will sacrifice ourselves for this nation, and as long as we exist, we will not allow any harm to come the way of Iranian people. And if the enemy has this, has such an objective, they should know they are preparing for their own defeat. We will not be forced to our knees in the face of such threats and bluffs. We will not surrender to these words, even if these words are realized into action. We know that the enemy doesn't have the will, the determination, or the power to fight us. The enemy is weak. The enemy has lost, the U.S. has lost its political power. This hegemony is falling apart. The USMS has been tarnished in the world. What you see of the US today is smoke, fire, pressing the knee on the neck of an African American, failing to handle the coronavirus crisis, and all these problems are causing the U.S. political system to implode. They tell lies, they bluff, they are rude, they have misconduct. How can this society enter a war? General, you referred to the Ain al-Assad strike a couple of times, and the leader described it as a slap. And if there is a chance, I will ask you about the real revenge for the assassination of Qasem Soleimani. But my question is, every time they reacted to this, and Mr. Trump, the U.S. president, said no great losses happened there. What's your analysis? Well, the reality that we targeted Ain al-Assad in response to the we didn't consider it a revenge in response to the assassination of Qasem Soleimani. We just wanted to strike a psychological balance. We wanted to show the U.S. that we are not afraid of the U.S. We will target them, even if when the U.S. declares that 52 positions in Iran will be targeted in response. We want to display the determination of the Iranian nation. This was not our retaliation. So our goal was not killing U.S. soldiers. We targeted the infrastructure of the military base, and we wanted to prove that we will keep our words when we say we will target their positions. The revenge for Qasem Soleimani's assassination will be much greater than this. It will not be limited to targeting a single military base. The whole U.S. political system has to pay for this assassination. The whole system of hegemony that plotted this assassination, their implosion, their falling apart is the price they have to pay, not the death of a couple of soldiers or a diplomat somewhere. This is not in line with our Islamic gallantry. And the revenge has not been carried out. But when they downplayed the human losses, they talked about concussions. Of course, we don't have great information about the losses they suffered, but we didn't want to take lives there. They might have accidentally suffered human losses, but even people would ask us on the street that killing a couple of American soldiers was not the right revenge for our Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Even their generals are not equal to our general, but we have to take revenge. Who could be equal to this great character? But the U.S. has to taste the bitterness of this harsh revenge. They must understand that they cannot assassinate a great Iranian general and be let off the hook. Qasem Soleimani was our brother. He fought for this country for 40 years. And this is not a personal issue. This is not just for Qasem Soleimani. This is the Iranian nation's determination. And this has to be realized. And this will be realized by the implosion of this political system. General Salami, since the Iran-Iraq war, we have seen many of our forces martyred. اما اگه بخوام بیاد کنیم شهید سعید شیرازی، شهید همدانی، شهید کاظمی، جنرال سید شیرازی، لوتنانت جنرال قاسم سلیمانی، این تصور و نگرانی بر برخی ها پیش آمد. There might be the concern that with the martyrdom of these great characters, there might be a problem for the security of the country. Some regional analysts believe that the resistance front would be undermined with the assassination of Qasem Soleimani and Hasht Shaabi leader. Could you explain on that? Well, regarding that, Qasem Soleimani was a great character with a unique role that in the integrity of the resistance front and defeating the US, the UK plots. This is a reality, and it's a reality that when a commander with such magnitude is martyred, people might concerns might be raised that problems might be caused, but with the will of God, after his assassination, new energy was poured into the Iranian society, and today it's not only Iranians who want revenge. The whole Muslim world wants revenge, an all-out revenge on the enemy. I believe that the influence of General Soleimani's martyrdom was greater than his life in strengthening the front of resistance. I said in Kerman as well that General Qasem Soleimani is stronger in the Muslim world after his martyrdom. Before his martyrdom, you would not see him on television. You would not see his portraits. But after his martyrdom, you see him on primary school student notebooks, on backpacks, on mosques, in mourning processions, everywhere in cities, on tables, at homes, everywhere you go, you see Qasem Soleimani alive. You see him on TV. We have not lost Qasem Soleimani. We have gained him. His dreams are moving forward. Great people are holding his banner, and the banner has not fallen. So really, no loss has happened. Maybe Americans had this assumption first that Qasem Soleimani was the pillar of the front of resistance, and after his fall, the resistance would fall together. But it was just the opposite. This is the nature of martyrdom. When a great commander is martyred, he becomes eternalized. His soul is eternalized. A lot of young people have the dream of moving in the same path and being martyred. So his martyrdom caused millions of people, young people, to become eager to resist the enemy. He changed into a reality that lasts. And nothing happened to the resistance front. Syria, despite all economic problems and pressures from the enemy, is still a steadfast. Lebanon, despite all problems and that great explosion, is still a steadfast. Iraq, the same way. The strength that is running in the Islamic world and the eagerness for resistance among Muslim young people across the whole Muslim Ummah. This fire is burning, so his martyrdom has had a positive influence on the resistance front. That was a great metaphor you made in comparing death and martyrdom, that martyrdom causes their dreams to be strengthened. And Qasem Soleimani's martyrdom has prepared for us to, let us understand the wickedness of the enemy and the righteousness of our nation. About the downfall of the U.S. General, you mentioned some points. It's interesting that FBI is warning that the U.S. is on the brink of a civil war. This could give us special analyses. But the U.S. is trying to maintain its claim of being military superpower. What do you see different between U.S. today and the U.S. 40 years ago? First of all, if you pay attention, the U.S. has lost its political influence as a superpower in the world. Look at this issue of renewing its arms embargo on Iran. Even Europeans who are traditionally U.S. allies did not follow the U.S., did not heed its call. The U.S. has lost its power as a great military superpower. The political covering has been removed. The U.S. used to introduce itself with four notions: security, welfare, and military power. These notions have lost meaning in the U.S. When these notions lose their reference in the real world, you see that society fall. You see it on U.S. streets. You see the behavior of the U.S. police with oppressed African Americans who are protesting systematic oppression and discrimination. A police officer presses an African American's neck until he dies. A lot of black people have been killed by the brutal U.S. police throughout history. This is the freedom they have been talking about. And you see the insults from the U.S. president, the U.S. failure to handle the coronavirus. A lot of patients who have been left without cure. The U.S. is falling apart, it's rusting from inside. The U.S. has become, the U.S. society is becoming polarized. Along the polls that the politicians are creating, you see the corruption of U.S. leaders. You see their failure in using their power outside U.S. borders. You see their economic failure. You see that U.S. Government debts is $25 trillion, while their GDP is $21 trillion. And when the GDP is less than their government debt, it shows the decline of their economic power. You see their political isolation in the world. The U.S. has become so weak politically that it has to resort to small nations such as the Dominican Republic or regimes in Bahrain or the UAE. It's hanging on them to bring it prestige and political value. Nobody likes to be an American citizen these days. Once the U.S. was a land of dream, was a dreamland for a lot of people in the world, but today nobody is proud of being American, and nobody dreams to become an American or be in the U.S. The U.S. image is ugly today. It's an image that is being humiliated, and you see the U.S. failures repeatedly. There are emergent powers, and this political isolation and their implosion. You see, if these points come together, the U.S. will fall apart, and this may happen in the near future. General, you refer to the U.S. debts and its ratio and its comparison with the GDP. Sir Trump made this point that the U.S. has spent $7 trillion in West Asia in our region, but without any tangible results. And at the same time, they're talking about Iran's influence in the region. What do they mean by influence? We have not spent such sums. What does he mean when he talks about influence? There are two types of influence. One, the way the U.S. means it, by using military force and mobilizing great military forces and deployments to control other countries. And this is a kind of influence. The way they wanted to do it in Iraq, but they failed, despite all their military buildup. But they couldn't gain military power and turn it into political gains. Americans are not able to change their military gains to political gains. Another influence is the way American states do it, to control, to create military bases and control their economies, to build up their militaries and put them under their own influence. But another type of influence is spiritual. Without any military build-up, we are doing this. We are influencing them through our values and dreams. There's a great difference between evil leaders and divine leaders. Divine leaders, just like our leader, that outlines the happiness of the world and has a dream of humans' happiness and righteousness, purity of the human society, and purging it of evils. They bring us friendships. When their leader enlightens the world with his guidance, miles away, people take this. For example, in Yemen, are we connected to them geographically? There is no military presence, there is no physical presence on the part of Iran. But you see youngsters in Yemen are following the Iranian revolution's example and moving ahead in that line. Do we have a strong military presence in Syria? We have a few advisors who are there on the request of the Syrian government. We don't have military forces there, but they say Iran is present there. This is an intellectual presence. It's a matter of faith. It's a matter of values. Without spending any money, we achieve political gains, and the resistance is formed. Just like young people in Iran. But evil leaders bring enemies. They cause people to turn their backs to them and become their enemies. The whole world is turning against them. The whole Muslim world is evidently becoming unsafe for them. There is no place for them. There is no place for them to stay. They have to land overnight
and
they have to do it secretly. If an American official can cross a street in a Muslim nation, then we can say Americans have real influence. With this normalization of ties between Israel and some Arab rulers, they just spread hate and discord. And this shows that the U.S. political system lacks wisdom. They admit it. They admit that the U.S. leadership lacks wisdom. And when this happens, they waste the powers of that country. Why do people shout slogans against the U.S. inside the U.S.? Why do they burn their flags? Why do they burn statues and symbols of the U.S. Foundation, because they see them as signs of oppression and hegemony? When the statues are pulled down, it shows that the living characters of those politicians are being pulled down. The U.S. society is facing a great uprising. The U.S. political system is falling apart. It's imploding. In the past, the U.S. used to have political stability, which it lacks today. It used to have political influence overseas, but this has been limited today. They wanted to isolate us, that they were isolated themselves. And despite all their psychological warfare, the world is taking side with us rather than with them. Over the past months, two Persian Gulf Arab states normalized ties with the Zionist regime of Israel. But people who are familiar with the regional issues are not surprised, but because of the clandestine relations between Bahrain and the Israeli regime and some other Arab regimes in the region. But my question is this official announcement of this normalization, what consequences does this have? What goals are they pursuing with disclosing their ties with the Israeli regime, despite all the violations it has carried out against the Muslim society, like the massacres in Sadra and Sharila. They have caused a lot of disasters. What is the reason behind this announcement? The reason behind this move is an election maneuver in favor of Donald Trump. It was a personal need that Trump had to show it is still strong in the political arena. So he tightened the noose around these Arab rulers, and within a political theater, they none of them appeared in their own real capacities. They were just playing roles in a theater, because the Palestinians were absent from this stage. The history of Arab normalizations with Israel has seen many of these examples. The Camp David peace agreement, for example, between Carter, Sadat, and in 1978, everybody thought the issue would be put to rest, but nothing special happened. Or, for example, December 13, 1993, the peace agreement between Rabin, Arafat, and Clinton. Everybody thought a conflict would be settled in the occupied territories, or the Oslo agreements. Nothing has happened. Only part of what they have been doing secretly has been publicized. And one point I would like to make: when you stand on your own feet and you're independent, you're stable. But when you lean on a weak point, you will fall. Both Israel and all these regimes are relying on an unstable point. This is an easy marriage that will bother both of them and lead to a bloody divorce. Everywhere Israel sets foot, there will be death and problems. All definitely in Muslim nations will respond to that. Some people say the Israeli regime is seeking to have military presence in the Persian Gulf. Israel is not in the position to do so. If it stations forces in the region, it will be great for us. It will be much closer to annihilation. So the slogan of "from the Nile to Euphrates," what about that? Look, the U.S. wanted to build a several hundred kilometer wall around Mexico, but where is the wall now? Around the White House. Look, pay attention. This is really important. The border wall on the border with Mexico has changed into the wall around the White House. If Israel has the dream of from the Nile to Euphrates, the wall they built through the West Bank with all those security installations, it wouldn't build that wall. And nobody can save them. Israel is imprisoned within walls. This is the example of the Quranic verse. They are living on a spider's nest. a spider's net. Well, we would like to ask questions about the snapback mechanism. This is, I would like to make this point, if this is a mechanism that even if triggered, nothing will happen. It will be of no use. The U.S. is politically in no position to launch a snapback of sanctions because it is not a party to the JCPOA, and the remaining signatories to the nuclear deal have stressed that the U.S. is politically isolated and not in the position to do so. And we strongly defend our interests in this field. But an arms embargo for us, remember that we produce our own arms, and an arms embargo will not influence us. But this is the political right for us, and we will gain it. We will take it back. And this will not happen. The U.S. are not in a position to do that, but they have already failed. They have politically failed. Last month, they tested this. They put it to trial, and now they tried it once again. And even tonight, it's been a month, and apparently tomorrow morning, they're going to present a resolution or something like that, but nothing will happen. We say to the world, we say aloud, that if our rights are not recognized under JCPOA, we will steadfastly continue with our measures. We'll move ahead, and we don't have any fears. We're not afraid of intimidation or bluffs, nothing. We're not afraid. We are not concerned, and people should not be concerned either. For years, we have developed in a way, God willing, that we do not need any foreign country. We're not dependent on any foreign country. Thank you very much, General Salami. Thank you. به حرمت اینکه از اتالی پاسخ این سوال بنده رو هم داشتید می‌فرمودید، یه وقتی رو منظور کردن که پاسخ شما منعقد بشه و کلام با آخر برسه. وقت برنامه تمام شده است. اگر Our time is up. If there is any point you would like to make. من از خدمات بسیج سرافراز قصد داشتم طرح سوال بکنم. We had a lot of questions. We would like to ask you about the economic services provided by the IRGC and their monitoring, their consistent monitoring of the developments in the region, their intelligence gains. But unfortunately, there was no more time, and we didn't want the interview to take a long time. Thank you very much for addressing the Iranian nation.
تشکر میکنم خیلی به زحمت افتادید و من باز هم به ملت شریف ایران اطمینان میدم که
And I would like to reassure the Iranian nation once again that all Iranian armed forces IRGC voluntary disciplinary forces all we are here to sacrifice our lives for this nation And to the very end, we will defend their welfare, their security, their peace of mind, to the last drop of our blood, and our greatest desire, or our main desire is martyrdom in the path of this people's pride. And we wish their success and greatness. Thank you very much, General. Thank you. میزبانی شایسته که داشتید سپاسگزاریم از حسن همکاری که داشتید Thank you for hosting us and for your great cooperation.
We're live there in Tehran. Hossein Salami, commander of Iran's Revolutionary Guards Corps in an interview covering a range of issues and activities, including past and present, that the IRGC has been involved with. Now, Salami said that enemies of Iran have perpetuated a number of proxy wars in the region, knowing it'll pull the Islamic Republic into them in one capacity or the other. He said Iran stood by and spearheaded resistance against Western hegemony and plots in the region, and today the resistance in the region, ergo, is stronger than ever. IRGC commander said that Iran has persevered to drive forward and achieve its goals in the face of immense pressure and sanctions, that the resolve and patience to do so has been evident in the Iranian nation. In fact, IRGC, he said, has helped the Iranian nation complete hundreds of infrastructure projects, has helped the needy, and has helped the fight against the COVID-19 pandemic, all in the face of crippling sanctions imposed on the country by its enemies. General Salami said if Americans are trying to pull the Iranian nation into a war, that they are crazy, and that while Iran is not looking for or welcoming a war, we will make any warmongering nation pay for the mistake of dragging us into the battlefield. Hossein Salami said, I don't play war games, I don't play mind games, and I don't play with my words. I say what I mean, and so does our nation. We will not cower to any aggressor and have the capacity to shine should worse come to worse. The U.S. president has accused us of plotting to kill a U.S. diplomat in South Africa, and it's preposterous for us to kill or hurt anyone not part of the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani. And that he said that is a sign of a weak nation, not a strong one. And killing a decorated general who built a career on fighting terrorism and fighting for freedom and justice is also a sign of a weak nation and not a strong one. But the U.S. Shall pay, he said, for General Soleimani's assassination. They thought they'll murder him and kill the resistance in the region. The resistance has only grown since his martyrdom, and the martyr general's name and image are bigger than before, and his vision and aspirations are becoming realized. That was General Hossein Salami from Iran's IRGC there in a live interview. And now back to our World News Bulletin. And now at least 12 civilians have been killed and more than 10 others injured in twin airstrikes on a Taliban position in northeastern Afghan province of Kunduz. Afghanistan's defense ministry says more than 40 militants have also been killed in the bombings. Our correspondent in Kabul, Amin Alami, has your details.